I'd like to officially welcome you to today's Internet Seminar, which will cover Tab Easy updates for the Fiscal Year 12 Brownfield Assessment and Cleanup Guidelines, which has been sponsored by the U.S. EPA Region 5. My name is Jean Downs, and I'm coming to you from the Technology Innovation and Field Services Division here at EPA, where I'll be helping to moderate today's session. We will begin the official presentation in just a few moments, but while we're waiting for a couple of other participants to join us, I'm going to cover a couple of housekeeping items and instructions. Just as a reminder, when you signed up for today's session, you would have been given not only a confirmation screen, but also a confirmation email, as well as a reminder email that contained information on how to participate today. In that reminder email and confirmation message, you would have seen a seminar-specific URL or homepage, which had the complete description for today's session, as well as contact information for our presenters, and also had access links to either download a copy of the slides or actually look at the slides online by clicking the button that says Go to Seminar. So you want to be sure that you have followed those links and have either downloaded a copy of the presentation materials or clicked the button to say Go to Seminar so that you can view the slides in a web browser window. Just as in all Cluent Internet seminars, each individual participant will be responsible for manually moving through the presentation materials at verbal cues from our instructors. And to start practicing that, I'm going to ask everybody to move along past the title slide, which is slide number one, onto slide number two, which does have our complete list of housekeeping reminders to cover. For those of you who are joining us on the phone lines, we do ask you keep yourself on mute during the presentation. There are designated points where you can take yourself off of mute and actually ask questions and interact with our presenters. But until we get to those breaks, we would ask you keep yourself on mute to minimize background noise and disruptions. You can use your own mute button or simply hit star 6 to mute your lines. Also, don't put the call on hold. There could be background music or commercials which will disrupt us. If you do need to, you are welcome to disconnect from the phone lines and then dial back in. There won't be any beeps or entry tones. So as long as you're on mute, we won't be disrupted by that at all. For those of you that are streaming the audio online, that won't be an issue. You can continue to listen to us through your computer, speakers, or headphones. For those of you who are listening by phone, we'll have designated time for Q&A. There's a couple of breaks throughout the session. But for those of you that are streaming the audio online, in order to ask a question, you're going to take advantage of one of the icons that you see located along the top of the slides in your web browser window. You'll see a series of links that appear along the top. Some of them can be used to move through the slides. The single arrow pointing to the right will move you forward one slide. The single arrow pointing to the left will move you backwards one slide. You can also use the numbered links that appear on the left-hand side to move through the materials. But most importantly, if you have a question, comment, or technical difficulty that you need to report, you can click on the little icon at the top of your slides that has a question mark button in it. As long as your pop-up blockers have been disabled, a new window will open up that will allow you to submit a question, comment, or report a technical difficulty. Again, we won't be addressing any of those questions until the designated breaks, but you guys are welcome to type up your questions or comments well in advance. When we get to the designated breaks, I will read them out loud to the instructors on your behalf so they can answer them. When we are all said and done with today's presentation, I'll take you to a final slide, which will have two important links. One, a resources page with not only the presentation materials we'll cover today, but other links and items that are related to today's presentation, and then a short link to our feedback form. So if you're looking to get credit for participating or verify your attendance today, you want to be sure to hang on until we go through the feedback instructions so we can show you how to receive that confirmation message. One final reminder for everybody today, today's session is being recorded and will be archived on the Cluent website. You will automatically receive a reminder email from us as soon as that archive is available for free download and replay online. So if you think this is valuable and you want to forward it on, you're welcome to pass that email on to other coworkers or individuals that would find it useful. So with the end of those reminders, I'm going to ask everybody to go ahead and move past slide number two onto slide number three, where I'll turn things over to Megan Quinn, who's coming to us from the EPA's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization to officially begin today's presentation.
Thanks, Jean, and good afternoon, everybody. As Jean said, my name is Megan Quinn. I work in the Brownfields office in Washington, D.C., so at EPA headquarters, and I'm responsible for managing this national competition for the assessment RLS and cleanup grant guidelines. And I just want to go over a few general changes to the guidelines from last year and give you a couple heads up on due dates. So let's go to slide four. If you have, hopefully you've looked at our guidelines already and have noticed that there are fairly minimal changes in FY12. So While we have done a little bit of tweaking, the main sections and the main layout stays the same. So we'll have the project or the community needs section first and your ranking criteria, and that's really your problem statement. The project description comes next as a part of your proposal, and that is really telling us how you're going to deal with that problem with our funding. The third section remains community engagement, partnerships, and this is telling us who you're bringing on board to complete the project in a timely manner. And finally, the last section of your proposal will focus on the project benefits or those outcomes and outputs that you expect based on the successful completion of the project. So those things all remain the same, and I just want to go over some of our big major changes for the year. There is one minor administrative change. We are requiring 15 page limits only for the narrative proposal. And if you'll recall, the threshold used to be a part of our narrative proposal and it was an 18 page limit, but we've done away with that. So it'll be 15 page limit for the narrative proposal and that will include just your responses to the ranking criteria. Your responses to the threshold questions will now be submitted as part of an attachment. So for community-wide assessments, there's not a lot of threshold information to provide because we are not determining whether a site is eligible. But for a cleanup grant applicant, a threshold can get to be fairly extensive. So we really decided not to have a page limit for threshold in the hopes that the applicant will provide us with more information. So that's really the only administrative change that we have this year. We did do some language tweaking to reflect program priorities, and we do this every year. This year we did focus the criteria, the ranking criteria, a little bit more on environmental justice. So we're asking now for applicants to provide a description of cumulative environmental impacts on their community, so impacts other than brownfields on their community, and to describe how you will integrate equitable development principles into the reuse. So that would be something that you would address in your project benefit section. We also ask how you'll promote local hiring and partnering with job training grantees. These are usually residents of the brownfields communities that are unemployed or underemployed. So again, we're really asking you to take a more holistic view of the disproportionate impact environmental issues and residual issues are having on your community. We're also really focusing on timely project completion, and I'll go into that a little bit more on the next slide, but we really want to only give funding to those communities that have enough funding ready to go to get their project completed. So that means that you found other leveraged resources to get your project completed and that you have a good enough plan that you're going to be able to complete it in the time of the grant. These are all 3-year grants. We also standardized some demographic information, and you'll notice that in the community needs section we provided a table, and I believe Sabine will go into a little more detail about that in a moment, but we did provide a table this year, so we are all looking, so all the applicants are providing us with the same standardized information about your poverty rate and your unemployment rate and your percent of minorities as they compare to the national numbers. Slide 5. There are really just 3 items that I think were big enough changes that they warranted kind of some highlighting on this call. The first and probably most significant change in our guidelines this year is in the threshold section, and this is a requirement for cleanup applicants only. So this is not a requirement for assessments, whether you're doing a site-specific or a community-wide, or an RLS for that matter, but I know that this is just focusing on assessment and cleanup. For threshold, we are now requiring that applicants provide us, develop and attach to their proposal an analysis of brownfields cleanup alternatives. This is something that in the past has been done after the award of the cleanup grant, but this year we're requiring just a draft ABCA. So this is not something that needs to be very lengthy. This is not something that EPA is approving. This is not something that your state will be approving. This is really just a first cut so that the public has an opportunity to comment on it. So once you develop the ABCA, you need to have it available with your proposal at the community notification meeting that you must hold. So this is really another part of the community notification threshold requirement. And you must have this ABCA with your proposal available for public comment no later than 2 weeks prior to proposal submission. So that means no later than November 14th can you have this before the public. And we provide a template of sorts in FAQ number 71, and those are all posted. All the FAQs are posted online, and I provide the URL on this slide. And frequently asked question number 71 details just the kinds of information we're looking for in the ABCA. So EPA, again, is not approving anything at this stage. We're looking to make sure that you have done something, that you've pulled something together that specifically outlines the analysis of the cleanup alternatives that you have considered, and that the public has had an opportunity to comment on those alternatives considered prior to proposal submission. The second area where we made some changes is in the ranking. The first one is, again, this idea of focusing on leveraging. And this is a new requirement for all applicants. Leveraging is a criterion under our broader project description criteria. And we're really asking here for applicants to describe the amount and types of secured leveraged resources. So before we would say, oh, what leveraged resources are you seeking? And now we're asking you to tell us exactly how much you have and from what sources. And if you don't have any, you will not be rated as or scored as favorably under this criteria. So it's really important that you have these secured leveraged resources up front. It tells us a couple things. It tells us that you know more about the project and how much it's going to cost, and it tells us that you've done some legwork at the front end of the proposal writing process. Again, we also ask that you include documentation. So this can be maybe a HUD letter, you know, saying that you've been awarded CDBG funds or something like that. Just some sort of documentation. Those aren't required, but again, to have documentation of these secured leveraged resources, you'll receive a more favorable score. The second area is this focus on community plans, and this again is a new requirement for all applicants. And this is in our project description criterion as well. And here we're really asking for you to describe your overall community plan, you know, perhaps the plan that your planning office and your local community has put together that was approved by the council, something along those lines, and how the specific project fits into that plan. And for communities that don't have a community plan, this will be tricky to get all the points for this, but you should describe what steps you're taking to get to the plan and, again, how the specific project would fit into the overall vision for the community. And also, I should have mentioned before about the partnerships. EPA is going to conduct reference checks, possibly, with partner organizations. So that's sort of just a part of our whole focus on leveraging and making sure that you have the partners and the funds and resources available and secured to you when you submit your proposal. So let's move to slide 6. And I'll just wrap up by reminding everyone that proposals are due November 28th. So you have about a month left, and the announcement will be made in May of 2012, hopefully in May. We never exactly know when we'll be able to announce these, but ideally next late spring. And just a reminder to please read the guidelines and the FAQs very carefully. They can provide a lot of important information. The frequently asked questions can, and the guidelines also, of course, outline, you know, exactly what types of information you need to provide in your proposal. And again, I include the FAQs and the FAQs link at the bottom here. So I am all done is all I wanted to touch on today, and I will turn it over to Sabine.
All right. Thanks, Megan. Hi, everybody. I really appreciate you could join us for this webinar this afternoon. We are on slide number 7, and that's just my intro slide. So we're talking about a web tool named TabEZ, and I will run you through that tool and get you familiar with it. So you may, if you choose to do so, use it for writing your assessment or cleanup brownfields grant application this year. Moving on to slide number 8, just to provide a little bit of background, TAB, T-A-B, stands for Technical Assistance to Brownfield Communities. There are four of us, four entities right now throughout the United States who provide these free services to communities. K-State, that's us. We assist communities in EPA regions 5 and 7. It's a national program, so all communities throughout the United States should have access to a TAB provider. Slide number 9. These are just the EPA regions depicted here on the slide in color, just in case you do not know exactly where you are as far as the EPA region is concerned. Again, region number 7 is in the middle. That's the lavender, lavender-colored 4 states there. Region 5 is just to the right of that, the orange-colored states. So we have 10 states total. And what the 4 TAB providers do, the United States are divvied up in zones, and all of us have separate zones that we serve, separate states that we serve. So if you have any brownfields issues, you might want to contact your TAB provider as a great resource. Moving on to slide number 10. I listed just kind of what we can provide, and these are the items that we are most asked to help with, to assist with, or to do for communities, and pretty much all TABs can provide the same kind of services. So this is what we use our grant funding from EPA for, and one of the items that we also used it for was the creation of this web tool that we are talking about today, and that's moving us on to the next slide, number 11. On this one, you see the home page for TabEZ. You see the URL up there, which is just www.tabeasy.org. Again, this is a free tool. Anybody who wants to can use this. There are lots of resources packed in this tool, lots of helpful hints associated with all the criteria that you need to respond to for the assessment of the cleanup grants. And we're just going to go through some general items for the tool, moving to slide number 12. I kind of went over this already. The most important thing, it's free. And you can write the assessment and the cleanup grant applications using this framework that the tool provides. Slide number 13. Here are some features and benefits for the user. It's very user-friendly. I mean, if you know how to use the Internet, if you know how to Google things, you can use this tool. There's absolutely nothing to it. I already mentioned there are a lot of resources integrated with this tool. There are definitions, regular citations. There are lots of links to other websites that might help you. And again, I mentioned already that there are the helpful hints that we included for nearly every criteria that you need to answer for the assessment, the cleanup grants. And those helpful hints are based on the debriefings that we set in with the communities, with EPA and the EPA webcasts that are being done every year to help communities and entities who want to write these kind of grants. Slide number 14. So as I said, TabEZ can provide the framework for a proposal. It can provide help, assistance, but it cannot write the proposal for you. I mean, you're still the one who needs to make the case as to why EPA should fund your project. Why should they give you the money? So you're still responsible to coming up with good language for your proposal. And slide number 15, I always have to say that TabEZ is not a substitute for reading the grant guidelines. We're always asked that, and while we put the instructions in there verbatim out of the guidelines, if you have looked at the guidelines and if you're familiar with that, the guidelines are quite lengthy, several pages, and not every single word out of the guidelines obviously makes it in TabEZ. For example, like how do you submit your grant, there's a whole section on that we did not choose to put into TabEZ. And there are some other items in the grant guidelines as they don't really 100% directly relate to a criterion that are not in there. So it will behoove you to still read the guidelines, even though you do use Tab Easy. Slide number 16, that's just the contact information here for our Tab program. Our website here is at the bottom, just in case you need that. Slide number 17. All right, let's get into the tool per se. Again, this is the home page. What we put here is basically an overview of what Tab Easy can do and what it cannot do, what I already mentioned in the previous slides. There is a link in here directly to the EPA Brownfields Grant Guidelines. That's kind of like towards the bottom of the text in red. Also, we always announce when these guidelines were updated for the most current grant guidelines, and you see that here at the bottom in green. The deadline is here. Also mentioned November 28, 2011. If there are any amendments that come out for these guidelines, and last year EPA issued, I believe, two amendments to the guidelines after they were released already, we will put this on the homepage, and we will put the links to the guidelines. So as soon as we find out about something like that, that will be also on the homepage for your convenience. So if we just pretend we're clicking on this About tab Easy, that's the left-hand upper corner of the slide here where I put this red arrow. Moving on to slide number, minus loading slow here, 18. This just tells a little bit about who we are and who we worked with to get this tool together. Slide number 19. We do have a tutorial, and that's available at the bottom of the home page. You can see the icon there, Tab Easy Tutorial. Also on the left-hand sidebar, you can see the word tutorial. Again, the red arrow points to it. Just for people who need a little bit of help with getting started with Tab Easy, we put that in there. Slide number 20, that's a screenshot of the tutorial. If you do use it, just remember it opens slowly. It loads slowly because it's just large. And as I said before, most users will not require the use of the tutorial. And you could always ask or call me if you have any questions, of course. Slide number 21, moving down the sidebar here on the left-hand side, looking at definitions. We put a lot of definitions into Tab Easy. If you go to slide number 22, that's a screenshot of the beginning of the definitions. They are in alphabetical order, and we add to this on a consistent basis. Whenever something pops up that we think is useful to add, we will put it in here. So you have, for example, continuing obligations are explained, environmental insurance, environmental oversight, what's meant by green space, and all this kind of good stuff. Moving to the next slide, number 23. We also list acronyms. Not everybody is familiar with all these acronyms that are being used in the guidelines and in the industry per se as it relates to the proposal. So if we look at slide number 24, this is the list of acronyms that's in Tab Easy. Again, this is being added to over time, and they're in alphabetical order. You can see there's a printable list of acronyms, kind of like in the middle of the screenshot, where it says link. You click on it, and you get the list of acronyms as a PDF if you want to do that. Slide number 25. Let's take a look at the top bar here. The red arrow points to the resource section. And here, if you click the next slide, slide number 26, you will have the acronyms there, of course, again, the definitions, how to get a DUNS number, what is a DUNS number. You have a link, again, to the EPA Brownfields Grant Guidelines. I mentioned the helpful hints already previously. Here, if you click on this link, for example, the Assessment Grant Application Helpful Hints, that gets you to a page where all these hints are listed by section. What I highlighted here at the bottom of the screenshot is the statistics and census information. And if we go to the next slide, slide number 27, this is what we put there. This is a fairly new section. So the upper part has general statistical and demographics information, some economic information. For example, here the Kaiser State Health Facts. That's a really nice site that I like a lot because you can get the individual state profiles there from all the 50 states, and you get state comparisons. It has health data as well as demographic and economic data. But what we also try to do, and this is the first year that we're kind of starting this, is to put state-specific demographic and statistical information in there. So we have it for Indiana, we have it for Iowa, for Kansas. As you can see here, there are some other states that we have it for, mostly states where we conducted grant writing workshops in. But we would like to add other states to it just to make it easier for the users from these states to pull all the information together that the grant applications require. So if you have or if you are aware of any good resources for the state that you are in, we would love to hear from you. Just send me an email or give me a call. Email is probably much easier. And send me the link, and we will check it out, and we will put it on Tab EZ. Moving to the next slide, number 28. We also put sample grant applications on Tab EZ, and we change these out every year because these are successful grant applications from the last grant round. So if we pretend we click on this quick link here on the left-hand side that I highlighted there, moving to slide number 29, these are the proposals, the successful grant applications from the last round that we were provided with by EPA headquarters. And you can see we have assessment grants there, community-wide grants, site-specific grants, we have coalition grants, we have cleanup grants, and also for the first time we put revolving loan fund grant applications on there because, I mean, you cannot use Tab EZ per se to write an RLF application because the structure is a little bit different, but a lot of these questions that you are supposed to be answering are very much similar to the assessment and the cleanup grant criteria and the questions that you need to answer there. That's why we put that in there so people, because we got asked a lot, you know, do you have something like that? Can you provide us with this? So it's on Tab EZ now. We have a search function just like every other web tool. Moving on to slide number 30. When you click that search word on the top bar, the screen will pop up. So you put your search word in the text box, click the green search button, and off you go. We also have a help function there, indicated by the red arrow, moving to slide number 31. That gets you to this page. You can contact us at any time. If you click this link, this will generate an email to me, and I will try to help you. As I said before, you can call me too. We have FAQs there for Tab EZ, specifically for Tab EZ. We also have the FAQs for the EPA Brownfield grants that EPA issues along with the guidelines every year new. I would highly recommend taking a look at that if you don't know what you need to do with a specific section of the proposal, or if you have a question in general, check the FAQs first before you call Tab, before you call your EPA rep. There is a link to the tutorial there. So if we look at the FAQs here for Tab EZ, that's the next slide, slide number 32. The first one, that's the most important one, can lost text be recovered? And the answer to that is no. You need to save what you put in to Tab EZ. If you forget to do that, it's gone. We might be able to recover it through our IT company, but I kind of doubt it. We never had to go that route. We never asked. It might be possible, but that is really something that should not happen. And I'll show you later when we get into the tool per se. It will prompt you to save along the way so you don't forget that. Registration. You can access the resources. You can access the tutorial, definitions, acronym, and the successful sample grant applications from the last round without registering for the tool. You just click on the link and you get in. As soon as you want to write your grant application, you need to register. You need to create a password for yourself and a username to protect your application. And to do so, you click on the register link here at the top right-hand corner of the screenshot. I indicated that with a red arrow. Moving to slide number 33. This is the registration page that you see there. So all you need to provide is your first name, your last name, your email. You need to create a password that is at least 8 characters in length. You retype it. And because we got inundated with spam, we put a spam protector on there, so you need to decipher these two words there. Well, these are not too hard that I have on there. And then you need to click the little box at the bottom of the screenshot here. I have read and agree with the above information, which is in the text box. You hit submit, and that's really all it takes. It's pretty much immediately. There is maybe like a 2-minute delay there between you putting this information there and being granted access into Tab Easy. The next slide would be slide number 34. Once you register and you're ready to log in, this is how the login screen looks like. So you would just put your email address there, you put your password in there, and you click the login button here, and you're good to go. A lot of times people forget their passwords because normally folks just use Tab Easy for writing the assessment or cleanup grant once a year, this time of year, and then they don't access the tool again, possibly until the next year, and it's easy to forget passwords. So if you have done so, you just put your email address in there, and then you click, I forgot my password, and then a new password will be issued to you, which you then can change, just like another on any other website, to whatever you would like to see there. The other thing that happens, too, that people don't realize anymore that they already have an account in Tab Easy. If you do have an account and you enter your email and you create or you put a new password and you try to register new, it will not work. But there will be a message that pops up that says you have a Tab Easy account already. And I think we probably have to do this in red as opposed to just in bold and black because people apparently seem to be overlooking that. So if it's something doesn't work and you cannot register, and there is a minimal chance even that you had a Tab Easy account in the previous year, like 2 years ago, whatever, just put your email in on this screen, on the login screen, and login screen, and just click I forgot my password and see if that works. If not, give me a call. Next slide, number 35. This is the first question slide. So if there are any questions regarding Tab Easy or anything else I talked about thus far, this would be a good time to ask those.
If you're on the phone lines, you can go ahead and take yourself off of mute. You can either use your own unmute button or hit #6 to unmute your phone line. And for those of you that are streaming the audio, again, it's the small button at the top of the slides online with a question mark in it. You want to be sure that your pop-up blockers have been disabled. And if you click that button, a new window will open up allowing you to type in a question or comment. Well, if I don't hear anything coming in on the phone lines and I don't see anything in the online queue, there will be additional breaks throughout today's presentation. So if you are in the process of coming up with a question, you can continue to type those in and get them in the queue, and then at the next break, we'll go ahead and address those questions. So, Sabine, if you'd like to carry on, we can go ahead and move everybody along to slide number 36.
All right. Thanks, Jean. So let's just pretend we are writing an application now in Tab Easy, and I'll show you what steps you need to take. So on the home screen, you see up there indicated by the red arrow the grant applications. So once you register, you're on the home screen, click grant applications, and what will show up is on the next slide, number 37. If you start a new application, you need to choose what you want to do here. So you see there the application type, choose the type of application, and obviously what will pop up is either cleanup or assessment. Moving to the next slide. There's the screenshot, so you basically you just mouse over assessment or cleanup, hit save and continue, and the application name, I think that's on the next slide. Let's go one more, that's slide number 39. You choose an application name, it just doesn't matter what it is, and hit save and continue. Next slide. Here you're asked about the application management, and later on I've got some slides to explain this a little bit more, but just briefly, here the application management is when you choose to collaborate with another person or persons on your proposal. That is possible within Tab Easy. You basically grant them permission to participate on your proposal, meaning that they will receive electronically a copy of your proposal and see what you do, and they can add to it or delete or whatever. If you want to see what exactly it is they do, if you don't just assign them a section and say, here, you do this, I do that, you know, if you both are writing on one section maybe, where you want to gather ideas, whatever, you can enable a feature here on this application management. It's kind of like track changes in Word, but it doesn't have the flexibility. All it does, it shows you in a different color what a person that collaborates with you puts into a section of TabEasy, and then you can either, as the owner, the initiator of the proposal, the application, you can accept or reject that change. So you have the choice here on this screen to enable this feature. And I click no here, and then the application specific configuration, this is just the type of contaminant that will be addressed by the grant funding, so you can put hazardous substance, petroleum, or both. So I click both, and then you hit the green button at the bottom here, apply, and we move to the next slide, number 41. When you do that, you get the grant specific outline for the criteria that you just chose, meaning assessment, cleanup, and then site-specific, community-wide, and the contaminants that you're going to address. So this is a cleanup grant. You have all the criteria there. You have the numbers there. It tells you the point totals. For that, we need to scroll down a little bit on this one here. Now here you just see the threshold ones. We have character counts here. Right now, they're all zero, meaning nothing has been added text-wise to these particular sections. We estimate that with the prescribed font by EPA and the line spacing and the margins, that you will have between 50 and 60,000 characters to make up 15 pages. And with this feature, we kind of thought it might be nice for you to estimate where you are in a proposal, where you are as far as the page limit is concerned. Let's move to the next slide. That shows you a little bit more of the screen. On the bottom here, the sections that are highlighted, these will give you the total character counts for example, the cleanup grant and the cleanup transmittal letter. Remember, you have 15 for the narrative, which is the cleanup grant character count in this case. You have 2 pages for the transmittal letter. We put the hardship waiver in there and the threshold criteria character count, although there are no page limits for the thresholds. It was just easier because this is the first time that EPA split these two and that the thresholds are not included in the page limitation per se anymore. It was easier with the structure that TabEasy had from previous years just to count everything. So you have the counts there, but if you really want to count the 15 pages, the top one in this instance, the cleanup grant character count, that's what you would need to watch out for. And then, of course, your transmittal letter. It's the second one down. Once you have this all done and filled out, you have 2 choices. You can export to Word, which I would recommend because you might want to clean up your application a little bit after you export, meaning that you don't want to necessarily maybe see the point totals after the section headers. Maybe you want to put some more italics in there. Maybe you want to change some spacing. You know, just polish it a little bit. And allowing to export to Word will do that, and plus you get a better handle when you get to that point where you really truly are for your 15-page limitation. Another thing that I want to point out here already, you see all these red dots here. That also is an indication for you that these sections that have this red dot here have not been touched yet. We move on to the next slide, number 43. If I already have registered for TabEasy and I've used it to write some grant applications and I have some stored and saved already, if I hit grant applications here on the top bar where the red arrow points, you will see this next slide, 44. This gives you a list of all the grant applications that you have in TabEasy. Nothing will get deleted unless you choose to do so. So what you see here on this screen, these are mostly like tests that I conducted on the tool, but you see a bunch of application names. You see the owner, meaning the person who initiated the application, last contributor. In this case, it's all me, but if you collaborate with people, you will see other names there, of course. And then the date when the application was last edited. And here you can go into an existing application. Nobody writes the application in one fell swoop and edit, or if you have some from previous years or something else happens and you don't want it anymore, you can delete it here. Next slide, number 45. So if you have an application and you edit and you write, it might look like this. What you see on the screen is that everything here that has a last contributor to it has some character counts to it. Obviously, there was text put to these sections. There's the date there when this happened. And you can see a bunch of yellow dots now. That means that there was text there, but this text is not the final product. If it were the final product, if I would tell the program this is final, and I'll show you later on how to do that, these dots would change to green. So you can see in your outline where you are on your proposal. Red means text is not there, nothing has been done to that section. Yellow or orange, depending on how your screen's colors are set, means that you're in the process of working on this particular section, and green would mean that it's finished. Next slide. So we're on slide number 46. And again, here you get the character count at the bottom. It counts everything automatically. It adds it up. You don't need to do that. Slide number 47. I'm just going to run you through the assessment real quick. It's the same setup as for the cleanup grant. Here I chose, obviously, the assessment grant. I gave it a name. I hit save and continue. Slide number 48. You get different choices here because, obviously, now you have community and site-specific in addition to the application-specific configuration, meaning your contaminants. And, again, you have the management feature in there if you collaborate on proposals. Slide number 49. So when we get into Tab Easy a little bit more, you can see here on this outline, for example, the site eligibility here, there is a section where it says view, meaning there are only some instructions there, some explanatory text that you can view there. You cannot add anything to it. The only time where you can actually write and should write something is when you have these edit buttons. Now you can see under site eligibility, these edit buttons are not there. And that's because, if you go back to the previous slide if you want to, you can see that I checked community-wide. Hence, you don't need to do the site eligibility. When I export this particular proposal to Word, all the section titles under site eligibility, for example, would still show up. The section numbers would still show up. And then the program puts underneath there, does not apply. So you have the structure, but because you're community-wide in this instance, you don't need to put text in there. You can manage participants if you choose to work with several people on your proposal. And that's on the left-hand sidebar here, highlighted, manage participants. If you click on that, slide number, gosh, where are we? No, it's not loading. Here we go. Number 50. This is what pops up. If you want to invite a person that is already registered for Tab Easy that has or who has an account with Tab Easy, you just put their email in there, send request, and the program will generate an email to that person that they're invited to participate on this particular proposal. And the proposal will automatically be put into their account, so they have pretty much immediate access after you do this. You can invite unregistered users. You just need to provide a little bit more information, like their first name, their last name, and their email, and a request will be sent to that person, and they will be asked to register for Tab Easy. And then the same thing happens. Once they're registered, they automatically, electronically get the account, or get the application into their account. Slide number 51, that just shows you how this email looks like that the system generates. So you have the name of the person there who invites you to help on a proposal. You have the URL there for Tab Easy, and you have the proposal name there. Slide number 52. You can manage your participants. I mean, it could be that you are working with several people and only two people do what they're actually supposed to be doing. The rest, maybe you don't like what they do, maybe, you know, you just want them off the proposal for whatever reason. You can do that. And for that, you go under Manage Participants, and then you get all your participants listed there with their emails, and then you have the option to remove them. Next slide, number 53. So looking at a cleanup grant here. Number 54. This is what shows up when you enable this feature, this kind of track change and quotes feature that allows you to see in a different color what other people do to text, add text to your proposal. So you have, whenever somebody adds something to it, this message shows up in the grant application home where all your applications are listed. Here the grant application name is Assess 2013. So before that, in red, pending approval will show up, meaning that you are required to provide approval before some text that somebody else puts in there will get accepted into the proposal. Slide number 55. In the actual grant outline, if this feature is enabled, the sections where approval is required will show up in red, as indicated by these two arrows here that I put in. Hope you can see that. So you have the person that added some text to it here. You have the date there. You can see these sections are in the works because they have the yellow dots there. You have the character counts. But before this text will be incorporated in the proposal, you need to look at it, and you are required as the owner of the proposal to either approve or reject it. Slide number 56 shows you a text section within the proposal. You see the text box. The new text that was added in by somebody is in green. You can see next on the right-hand side the date when this was modified, your original text here, and who the author was when they did it. And then you have the option here to approve or to reject. If there are multiple revisions that occurred, you can click Review or View Revisions, and all this will pop up in on the right-hand side of the text box in this gray shaded box. One caveat here is don't work with more than two people. I mean, not more than two people should work on a section if this feature is enabled, meaning you as the owner and somebody else. Because you cannot, like in track changes, pick and choose what you accept or reject. It's either the whole thing comes or the whole thing goes, but you can't have it that you select maybe just one paragraph that you like, and the next paragraph the person wrote what you don't like. If you have something like that, you need to accept the entire, the entire paragraph, the entire string that the person put in, accept it and work with it then. Or if it you dislike the entire wording, the entire paragraph, the entire section that the person put in there, then you can delete it all. But you cannot pick and choose and take a word here and a word there, or a sentence here and a sentence there like you do in track changes in Word. So this is really right now only meant to show you, okay, this was done by somebody else. This is what they did. Accept it as the owner. Work with it more if you have to, or accept it and leave it or delete it. But there's not much flexibility built in there right now. Since this is the first year that we do that, it would be great to receive some feedback on this feature. Meaning, is this enough for most of the folks who use Tab Easy, or does it need to really have all the flexibility that, like, a track change feature in Word would provide? So if you could provide some feedback for that, if you want to provide some feedback, that'd be really appreciated. Next slide, number 57. Questions. All right. Are there any questions?
Again, if you're on the phone lines, you can take yourself off of mute using your own mute button or simply hitting pound stick to unmute your phone line. We do have a question that came in online from Sutton's Bay in the United States, and they ask, once you export your document to Word to clean up, are you done? Or can you still go back in and make additional changes before your application is completely finished?
Yes, and the answer is yes, you can do that anytime. You can also export to Word in between, like say you're not totally done, you just want to see where you are, how does it look. I mean, exporting to Word does not prevent you to do any more changes to your proposal.
Okay, great. Again, if you're streaming the audio online, you can use that question mark button to type up a question electronically. And if you don't have time to finish up typing it, we again will address questions at the next break. But just want to double check and make sure that nobody else on the phone lines has a question. Okay, if you'd like to continue on to me, feel free.
All right, we'll do. So we are on page number, slide number, I should say, 58, and we're just going to delve a little bit more into a proposal and I'll show you the features of Tab Easy More. So what I highlighted on this slide is, and we are in a cleanup grant here, the cleanup important information README section. For the assessment, we have the same thing. It just reads assessment important information README. So we'll just pretend we clicked on that. We're moving on to slide 59. And when you do that, you get all this information. Most of it comes out of the guidelines, some we put in, but for example, in the middle of the slide, you see the page limitations, required font size, attachments. Polishing your proposal is there, availability of EPA to answer questions. So it's kind of like background information for the proposal. Next slide. That would be slide number 60. So let's just look at what happens if you, for example, click on Edit Eligible Entity here. So we'll just pretend we do that. We move on to slide number 61, and this screenshot would pop up. So you have the section title here. You have the section instructions, and again, these are verbatim out of the guidelines. You can see in red there is an active link there, helpful hint, and I'll show you later how that works. You can also see the character count section not started. If you would have some text in this text box here at the bottom of the slide, you would have a character number there. You have comments here, and I think that's what we're going to talk about just a little bit here. It says add comment, and this is a comment box that you can use. Like, say you're writing, you are late for a meeting, you need to go to a meeting, you don't want to lose your thought. You could click on this box and put a note to yourself there. So it's like a little notepad. Or maybe people collaborate on a proposal and they want to just bounce something off each other real quick while they're both in Tab Easy, maybe, and they don't want to use email, call, whatever, they could use the comment box. So what happens if I click Add Comment, and it's going to be on the next slide, this pop-up window pops up, and you would type your comment here into this box. You click Add Comment. You close the window. And we're going to go to slide number 63. And where you would have added the comment per se, the text would show up in this gray line here, within that gray line where it says comments on the left-hand side on the slide and add comment, the button on the right-hand slide. So that comment would show up there. The other thing I want to show you on this slide is the textbook per se. It's pretty much like word processing. You type it in. The font, remember, is set at 12. You cannot change that. That is structurally integrated into Tab Easy. But you can use bold, italics, underline, and all the other icons that are here on top of the text box. Whenever you're done with something, whenever you have put text in there, hit save. Either hit save or hit save and back to outline. If you just hit save, you can continue with this. Your screen won't change. If you hit save and back to outline, it will get you back to your grand outline. If you just put text in here and you hit back to outline, I believe the system will prompt you and ask you, do you really not want to save that? Because if you do that and you don't save it, your text is gone, totally gone. So always, always save. You can always also see here above the back to outline button here, there is a box that says not finished. If I leave it like that and I save the text that I put in here, that's when I get this yellow button on my outline, because I told the system basically I'm not done with this section, there may be more edits, it's not finished yet, but I have some text in there. So the button would change from red to either yellow or orange. If I tell it here by clicking on this little down arrow there and select finish, that's when the button on the proposal page in Tab Easy would change to green, because then you're telling the system it's finished. The other thing I want to mention on this slide is the helpful hints. That's an active link there. That's the button by the section instructions. So we're going to the next slide, number 64. If I click that, a separate window will open up and you will see the helpful hint there. In this instance, because it's eligible entity, we have pretty much whatever EPA has in the guidelines there who can apply under this section. Sometimes we may just put hints there based on, you know, what we experience in the debriefs or what EPA said in their webcast. Or there might be some links in there that might be useful to you if you're writing a section and you need information. So it never hurts to look at the helpful hints. Moving on to slide number 65. Let's take a look at another section here. I highlighted continuing obligations. Slide number 66. This is how that section looks like. Now here are multiple access links in here. If you were to click on the continuing obligations link, you would get the definitions of what that means and the reasonable steps, same thing. So these active links will give you more information regarding the terms that are used there. And, of course, again, you have the helpful hints here. Next slide, number 67. Let's take a look at the budget here. Going to the next slide, number 68. In the instructions for the budget, you have another kind of link here. This is an active link to the EPA FAQs that get published along with the guidelines every single year. So this text also comes directly out of the guidelines that was mentioned in the guidelines along with that link. Next slide. The helpful hints are in here too. This is slide number 69. And remember, the guidelines prescribe a budget table. You really should use that table, and we put this in Tab Easy. You can access that by either clicking on the icon in that icon field where it says budget table, or in the text below where it says click the budget table. That's an active link too. That will get you to the outline or the template for the EPA required budget table, and I will show you that in a minute. The other thing here, when you click on this little sidebar here that's indicated by that red arrow on the right-hand side, you can move up and down in that text box because there is more in there than it's what is on this screenshot. So play around with that when you get to Tab Easy. Slide number 70. This is the template for the budget table, again, just like it is in the guidelines. We added the ability of the system, or for you as a user, to add rows and columns if you want to have more tasks in there. If you need more categories in there, you can do so. Everything adds up automatically, vertically and horizontally. It never hurts to double check, though. And you can edit the table just like you edit any other table. Slide number 71. Here, I put some information to the budget table. Again, you're scrolling up and down the budget table because there tends to be a little bit narrow window by using the scroll bar on the right-hand side of the text box. Slide number 72. The budget narrative goes directly underneath the budget table, and there's space for that allotted in Tab Easy. One thing I would recommend, underneath the budget table, you see that on kind of the top of the text box here, the text with the headers here, 2 and 3, you might want to delete that once you export to Word, because these are just the explanations under the budget table that may just take space up in your proposal, that these are not necessary to carry over. Slide number 73. This is the grant transmittal letter. Now, remember, when you read the guidelines, the transmittal letter is kind of like in the middle, and not at the end of your actual proposal outline as it is in the guidelines. We put it at the end because you really should write the transmittal letter last, because that's the summary of your project and your project develops while you write. Hence, we think it's probably a lot better for you to tackle this last. So we put this last in our outline. This will print up separately. You have the choice as to what you want to export. You can see that at the bottom of the slide, where it says right now all, but if you click on that little down arrow there, you can select your actual grant application. You can select the transmittal letter or the hardship waiver if you have one. That all goes separate. You can see the hardship waiver request is there. That's what you need to fill out there at the very bottom of the outline. So I just want to mention this about the transmittal letter, because we got the question at one point, well, why is this out of sequence a little bit? And the reason basically is what I just mentioned, that you should write the transmittal letter last. But we put the section headers as they appear in the guidelines. So you go from Roman numeral 5 for the ranking criteria down to Roman numeral number 4 for the transmittal letter. Next slide, number 74. This is what an item under the transmittal letter would look like, pretty much the same. You have the information there, the instructions, verbatim out of the guidelines, and then you have that text box there. So it's pretty much the same throughout. Next slide. When you export a word, and we're going to do this right now, going to slide number 76, this is how it would look like. So, for example, you see here on the top of the screenshot, these are all the sections that did not apply for this particular grant application. So you still have the section headers and the numbers there, but then the system generates the sentence does not apply. And that's because you really don't want to leave anything unanswered. If the section doesn't apply to you, you need to say so in your proposal. You have the ranking criteria here, you have the section numbers, and this is what I mean by cleaning it up a little bit, because the point totals here, for example, community need, 40 total points, that comes through. Now, you may not want to have it like that in your proposal. You may want to take the point totals off. Another thing I want to point out here, this is a new thing in the guidelines, and Megan already alluded to that, and the financial need, you now have, courtesy of EPA, a table already. This is what you need to use. This is what you need to put in there. And the national numbers here were already provided in the guidelines. So this is nothing that I put in here for Tab Easy. That's the way it shows up in the guidelines. Slide number 77. If you have any feedback, if you have any questions, if you have any suggestions for Tab Easy, what could be done better, what's missing, what could we take out perhaps, or anything, you can use this button on the right-hand upper corner of the home page of Tab Easy. When you click that, the system will generate an email that goes directly to me, and I will answer any questions as soon as possible. When you do that, moving to slide number 78, this is how it would look like. You can put your feedback subject there, your email address, you can put your comments there. But if you want to, you can submit anything and everything anonymous. And by just clicking that box there, I'd like to send an anonymous comment, which means the system will suppress your email. And then you submit the feedback, and then we'll just take it from there. You can request that you be contacted either by phone or by email. So it works just like a normal feedback. Last slide, number 79, here's my contact information again, my phone number, this is my direct phone number, my direct line to my desk, and that's my email number. So if you have any questions, any comments, anything at all, feedback, don't hesitate to contact me. And I think at this point in time, if anybody has questions before we move on, I'd be glad to answer them if I can.
Okay, great. Again, if you're on the phone lines, it's your own mute button to unmute or hit #6 so that we can hear you on the phone lines and you can ask your questions directly. Okay, and I also don't see any questions in the online queue. So if, again, you guys can continue to hang on to your questions if something does occur to you. We still have more time for Q&A with our presenters. So if you are in the process of typing something up, you can go ahead and continue to submit that in the online queue, and we'll be sure to address them before we close out today's session. So with that, I think I'll direct everybody on to the next slide, which is slide number 80. And Deb, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Hi, everyone. This is Deb Orr with US EPA in Region 5, and I'm going to finish up the session today by sharing with you some of the lessons learned and areas of improvement that I pointed out to while debriefing unsuccessful applicants in last year's competition. I debriefed over 50 entities, communities, not-for-profits. All had potential all would have been potential grant recipients if they had submitted successful proposals. If you're unlucky next year, I strongly recommend that you take advantage of the opportunity to talk to your regional office and get some feedback on your proposal. What I'm going to share with you now are not all of the points that I noted while debriefing, but these are some of the ones that I hope will be useful. By the way, on the slide 80 that opens this presentation, that is a picture of one of our success stories that we compile every year, one of the sites that we addressed with Brownfields Funds, specifically the Laidlaw facility in Metropolis. It was recognized as one of our success stories because they implemented one of the fastest cleanups in the region. I'm moving on to slide number 81. What you see, of course, is the definition for brownfields. We've all seen this before. And hopefully you all know that EPA is not the entity that determines whether or not a site constitutes a brownfield in your community. This determination is a local land use decision that's triggered by the reuse of the site. One mistake that we sometimes see in our proposals is an applicant will use a site as an example in addressing the ranking criteria that may not be eligible for funding. So one example of this would be if you are applying for hazardous substance funding, and as you're going through the questions, you use a petroleum site to respond to the questions. So if you're not asking for petroleum, you should probably not be using petroleum sites. That's the lesson there. Another one would be if the site that you use as you're answering the ranking criteria questions is an NPL site. If you look at the definition of a brownfield, a national priority list site is not eligible. So just be careful as you make your selection of what site to use as an example of how brownfields impacts your community. The picture on this slide is a depiction of the reenactment that takes place each year at the Massac State Park in Illinois, and that park borders the Laidlaw facility that was cleaned up that I mentioned previously. This reenactment draws 80,000 people a year, and it turns out that the timing of that celebration is what drove the cleanup schedule for this site. So now I'm going to move on to the next slide, slide number 82. I felt compelled to talk a little bit about the Targeted Brownfields Assessment Program because I think one of the things that you need to ask yourself is do you really need a grant? Have you thought about whether or not the Targeted Brownfields Assessment Program would help you? You know, each region has established a program, and you can access it easily. It's a whole lot easier than going through the competition that you're contemplating and looking forward to this year because there is no competition for this Targeted Brownfields Assessment. It's free. EPA will perform an assessment using a contractor on the site that you request. And the only thing, of course, is it's subject to the availability of resources. In Region 5, what starts the process is a letter, and we get that either through the local mail system or through email. Upon receipt, we set up a call and we interview the applicant to make sure that we understand what they want and to determine whether the site and the applicant is eligible. Sometimes in Region 5, this work is carried out by our state. We usually give them right of first refusal, but we did our share here on the federal level as well. If you're really interested in looking at this to see if it's an option, I've provided the webpage or the link where you can find more information. I'm now moving on to slide number 83. And this is of the East St. Louis farmers market, and that's an example of a project that used targeted brownfields assessment. The farmers market opened in 2010 after a two-year journey that started with a community dream. The TBA resources were used for assessment, and then the tanks and impacted soils were addressed using stimulus funds that the state of Illinois was lucky enough to snare. The redevelopment addressed the health of local residents by providing access to healthy food choices for citizens that live in a food desert. And it also was implemented with the hopes that it would stimulate jobs. This reuse would stimulate jobs. The best that's yet to come was one of the comments that the speaker at the ribbon cutting ceremony used. And the community's goal was to promote small business in the city. The redevelopment is an example of redactive reuse because they used an existing structure. It also, because of the unique combination of partnerships, it was a neighborhood group and the University of Illinois where the students did quite a bit of research on farmers markets, on market studies, architectural and lecture, and landscaping students helped out with the adaptive reuse planning. So this was a win-win project for all involved. The other entity that often uses this targeted brownfields assessment are the not-for-profits. We often see them request the TBA, and with the funds, or actually the resource that we provide on the federal or state level, we'll develop an estimate for cleanup and a cleanup plan that then is repackaged by the not-for-profit into a cleanup grant application. So those are two examples, and if you haven't considered this resource in the past, I think now would be the time for you to do so before you start down the path of putting together the proposal. So I want to spend some time, too, talking about the selection process. This is a national competition, and so a national panel was convened for each one of the proposals. So last year, for instance, for assessments, it was three randomly selected reviewers. Typically, the home region reviews the threshold questions, and we're allowed to contact you for clarification in the event that you don't provide sufficient information for us to make a decision. If you fail threshold, you're no longer in the competition, and you'll be told, advised of that fact. The region also reviews and scores the programmatic capability ranking criteria, and individuals from other regions take on the rest. New this year is a commitment to fund communities that don't currently have grants at a higher rate, and also note that there is a section called Other Factors that you need to be mindful of as you go through and respond to the ranking criteria, the ranking criteria. I'm going to move on to to the next slide number 85, and I'm going to start the general suggestions. And in case you haven't noticed, a lot of the comments will be specific to assessment because that's the largest number or largest type of proposal that we receive, but the cleanup ranking criteria is about the same. You just kind of respond to it site-specifically. So the general suggestions, you need to read the proposal guidelines. You've seen that before. Nothing new. You need to make sure you answer all of the questions. This is very important, especially now because of the changes in the point, particularly with the assessment. So that means every question counts. One comment I conveyed to all of the debriefs, on all of the debriefs this year was on formatting. there is a formatting feature, I guess it's in the word processing, that allows you to make the borders uniform, and believe it or not, that bothers several of the panel members last time out. And so what I'm suggesting is that you leave that feature off, that you let the edges be ragged, and that makes it a less difficult read for the panels. Moving on, the panel review report is looking for proposals that will succeed, and so the first step is for you to tell them what you're trying to achieve. We know at EPA what we're looking for in these, and what we are looking for you to tell us as part of the proposal process is how our needs intersect so that we have common goals, and we need to assure us that you're going to be successful in meeting them. If you submitted a proposal in the last round, you need to tell us what you've accomplished since then. I use the analogy of a bus or a train, and the thought that the train is moving with the community or the applicant firmly in the driver's seat with a known destination, what we need to know from you is that you're going to make it irrespective of whether these funds are made available to you, but that if we give them to you, you're going to do it faster. And so that's your one of your charges that you need to be aware of. I've already heard back from at least one of my states. They've written 13 support letters. So if you haven't made contact with your state and tried to figure out what the deadline is and got on their agenda, their calendar, now would be a good time to do that. And then finally, money is tight this year. That most likely will mean less projects will be funded. And not only that, given the state of the economy, that probably means tighter budgets in the foreseeable future. So make this year count. I'm moving on to slide number 86 now, I'm talking about community need. We had a record number of coalition grants funded last year in the last round, and if you're going to submit this year, you need to make sure that you provide information on all of the coalition members, even those that you don't have enough space to discuss specific sites and impacts. Minimally, you need to explain how the coalition will benefit each member, and certainly identify target sites, target populations, contaminants, and health effects for those sites, and then a vision for the reuse. Moving on to slide number 87, community need continues. The reviewer needs a yardstick to measure the impacts described in the ranking criteria, and that is typically comparative stats. This year, as Megan mentioned, there's a format for providing demographic information, but you should recognize this as being the minimum amount of information that needs to be provided. And what you need to do is provide whatever else you need in order to make the case for the vision or the real problem that you'll be addressing. The other thing, you need to connect the dots, that is, explain to the reviewer what the statistics mean from a local perspective. And I'm telling everyone, don't let EPA interpret that data for you. You need to tell us what it means for you. An example would be if you found elevated lead levels in the children in your community, which could mean, for instance, that the brownfields in that area might be contributing to it. They might be the source of the lead. Or it could mean that the housing stock in that particular part of your community is old and contains lead paint, and that one solution would be to upgrade or improve the housing stack, replace it with a more affordable housing. So the goal of the redevelopment that would start with the assessment grant is to make sure that that housing is safe and that it's available in your community. The expected outcome could be lower blood lead levels in the children that live in that neighborhood, and certainly more choice for housing for the residents. So Brownfield's funds in this instance would be used to address health and health impact. The success of the intervention would be measured by quantifying the number of affordable homes or housing units made available. A point to make here is if you are going to be looking at health effects, the local health department should be involved in the project, because they're the experts and their advice should be invaluable. And typically what we want to see in terms of that kind of involvement would be in helping prioritizing sites. So I'm going to move on to the next one, number 88. That moves on to project description and feasibility of success. So cost share, which is what in-kind support is typically can typically be satisfied with, is required under only the cleanup and the revolving loan. But guess what? You know, we like to see a local commitment at all of the grants. So if you plan on, say, convening an advisory group, one of the things that you need to do is quantify what that resource commitment is for participation by the members of that group. And, of course, it's not required, but it is something that we look for in this particular ranking criteria. Community plans, and Megan mentioned those, they come in all different sizes and shapes and names. That Laidlaw cleanup that was in the opening slides was actually part of a tourism plan. And these are also called comprehensive plans or master plans. And one of the things that came out of the debriefing is that these have considerable community input as part of that that process. You know, developing one of these must have community input. So if you recently approved one of these, or if you're in the process of approving one of these, one of the ways to demonstrate confidence and being able to get the community involved and engaged in projects would be to share that as part of your proposal. So that was one of the things that I came up with as part of the debriefing this year. While the funds made available in this grant will only be used to investigate the site for, say, assessment or for cleaning up, the ultimate goal, of course, is reuse of the site. And responding to the questions, you need to tell us how you demonstrated or how you have been successful in past reuse projects. And this demonstrates confidence in the whole pipeline. Bringing all of the pieces together of the puzzle is something that we're looking for, and we're looking for projects that will lead to redevelopment, and if you've done that in the past, you should emphasize your ability to do it again in the proposal. You need to be specific about what you will track to measure success. The guidelines discuss the elements that EPA will track. That includes leverage resources, jobs created, assessments completed. We outline quarterly reporting, and we talk about the ACRES database. But what we want to know is we want to know what it is you're going to measure and how you're going to measure success. In the example I used in previous slides, I mentioned, say, the number of affordable housing units could be something that's counted. But something as simple as the number of outreach activities to local residents would ring well, would serve well if you put it in that section. You need to stick with the level of detail that the budget template provides. estimate the cost for each major task and then aggregate smaller steps into the major categories, what we discovered is too much detail often leads to questions about the eligible use of the funds and ultimately a loss of funds. So TAB-EASY has examples of proposals and on the resource page, and these would be good for you to preview, to look at, to see what the level of detail was contained in successful proposals that were funded. If there is a suggested format, like a table, I suggest you use it. This will raise less questions and provide the minimum amount of information that the reviewer is looking at and looking for. Sometimes we see paragraphs that provide a lot of detail on the state cleanup programs. Clearly, the reviewers have some level of knowledge about state cleanup programs. We know that there are sequential steps and all of that, but also we don't really need to know that you're an expert at that at this juncture. The reviewer just needs to know that you plan on using the state program to help you with the assessment and the cleanup, and that's it. I'm moving on to slide number 89 now, which continues looking at project description. The grant allows for up to 20% of the funds to be used for health monitoring, and if you're proposing to use these funds for that task, you need to work closely with the health department. I talked about that in the previous example. There should be minimally a letter of support that outlines that collaboration, what it will look like, and it should be as specific as possible. Another group that's often overlooked is the regional planning organizations. Most of these groups are responsible for transportation planning, and so they have real ties to the Department of Transportation, as well as the USDA, which is more of a partner for rural communities. So these represent sources for funding and leverage dollars. One of the other things to note with the emphasis on community planning, this regional planning group could help you either redo your or update your community plan, your comprehensive plan, or at least tweak it so that it contains sustainable development or some of the other initiatives that are consistent with the EPA. The ranking criteria asks for information on past performance, and one thing to note is typically the panel, the review panel, doesn't look at this past performance section. So this is the one section that the EPA regional staff weighs in on. And after all, that makes sense because they have the most experience, particularly with organizations that are past grantees. So if you provide examples of successful projects in this section, then oftentimes it's not taken into the ranking and scoring account. It's not accounted for there. You're asked to tell us about your experiences when you manage other funds. If you have that experience, those funds should probably also be in the leverage section of the budget. After all, won't you be looking for all opportunities to leverage dollars? So in the example that I talked about recently with the elevated lead levels in children, blood lead levels in children, improving the housing stock HUD funding would be the funding source for that. If you've used HUD funding in the past and been successful in addressing problems, you should highlight that success and mention HUD as a possible source of funding in the leverage section. So I'm going to move on to slide number 90, which is community engagement and partnership. If you're looking, what we're looking for here is meaningful opportunities for community input as early in the process as possible. We saw many proposals last year that targeted a specific population, but did not address how the decision was made to select that population, or more importantly, how the public was involved in the decision to target that particular population. By not telling us how this was done, applicants missed an opportunity to show that they know how to do it and they've done it in the past successfully. Many of the support letters didn't agree with the proposal. I think that's enough said. It's better to not even have a support letter if there's inconsistency. Don't forget job creation. Megan mentioned that. That's our job creation, job training. This is new. In the debriefings, I discovered that while many communities did not have a brownfield job training grant working in the area, they were connected to the Workforce Development Board, and they were working closely on retraining or training for reuse jobs. This did not make it in a lot of the proposals that we looked at last year. Community colleges and universities are valuable resources for brownfields work. The land grant colleges in particular are active in most communities and are a good source. That U of I experience that I mentioned. The extension programs provide valuable support to local residents in a lot of the areas. The community, they're really involved in the community garden initiatives that are springing up all over the place. It was the Friends of Massac Park that were critical in the reuse of that Laidlaw facility. And that neighborhood group was the catalyst for that East St. Louis Farmers Market. So, moving on to slide number 91. If language or culture is not, is not an issue that you need to address, you need to tell us that. You don't want the reviewer to be guessing. That way you might lose points. If you or your partner have had some recent experience in dealing with the population that you're targeting with the funds that you're requesting, you need to tell us about it. If parts of that interaction didn't work, you need to tell us how you're going to fix it. So examples are very important here. If you're planning on health monitoring, be sure to discuss how you are going to make sure that the public is kept abreast of the project and be provided an opportunity to make or to provide input in the decision making, and also how the local public health department is going to be used. While it's not required, except in the cleanup, if you've already had if you've already engaged that target population, you'll look better. And I think we've already touched on this last bullet here. Any decision, you should describe how you've had community input. On to slide number 92, project benefits. So on the project benefits part, you should circle back to the beginning. The benefits for all of the community needs that you outline should be addressed here. If you identified the need to address obesity by, say, providing green space, then a metric that you could propose to track that would be the amount of new green space provided. If you're protecting drinking water supply by eliminating non-point sources, then you need to tell us how many acres of brownfields you plan on addressing. And if you have a policy or an ordinance on green remediation or walkable neighborhoods, you need to tell us how you're implementing that policy. And this would be one of the most important pieces or information that you could provide in this section. There are frequently asked questions on equitable development and displacement of residents, and you need to read these. For instance, the provision of affordable housing in a community where it's needed could be an example of equitable development. If you have any other similar types of experiences, now in this section it would be prudent to put it there. The next and almost last slide, slide number 93, shows the schedule and identifies this checklist that was put together by Region 1. There's a checklist in the guidelines right now, and this one expands on it. It's got a lot of really great detail in it, and I suggest you look at it. Finally, you've seen this date, November 28, 2011, or when the guidelines or when the proposals are due. Megan's mentioned spring, actually May, for award announcement. And then after the announcement, you'll negotiate a cooperative agreement that includes a work plan, and the funds should be available in October. Last slide, number 94. Resources and feedback. I guess I'm done. Are there any questions?
Well, thank you. Again, as a reminder, if you're on the phone lines, if you have any questions, you want to unmute your line, you can hit #6 or use your own mute button to take yourself off of mute and ask a question or make a comment. And we'll also have one last call for those of you who are streaming the audio online. If you are online, you can use that question mark icon at the top and actually type up an electronic comment or question. Okay, I don't see any other questions in the queue, and I also don't hear anybody else on the phone lines. But before we close everything out and go with our final reminders, I'd just like to give each of the presenters a chance to make any closing comments. So first I'll start with Megan.
Nope, don't have anything. Thanks.
Okay. And Sabine?
I think I'd just reiterate, you know, if anybody has any problems with Tab Easy or would like to know more or doesn't have the time to really delve in and wants to have a quick tutorial or whatever, that they can call me and I'll be happy to help. We can do webinars, you know, just one-on-one, or we can do it for groups. It doesn't really matter. So we can help in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. And Deb, any closing comments?
Thanks to all that are on the phone, and I encourage you to take advantage of the resource that just been offered to you by Sabine Martin, or if you're in a different region, you know, by your own TAB group, and that's about it.
Okay, great. Well, with that, I'll direct everybody to the final slide, as Deb mentioned earlier, which is slide number 94. On that slide, you'll find two of the links that I mentioned when we started today's session. The first one is our additional resources page, where not only can you download today's PowerPoint presentation, but we also have links to the Tab Easy site as well as a number of other related websites. So I encourage everyone to take a minute to peruse those additional resources. The other link that's there is our feedback form link. It takes just a minute or two to submit online feedback. We do read each and every one of those forms that are submitted, so if you'd like to continue to see free online training like this offered, we do ask that you fill out a short feedback form for us. If you are looking to get verification or receive credit for your participation today, you can fill out the feedback form and actually check a box to have a confirmation message sent to you, also as well as being displayed on the screen that you can print out to verify that you did submit feedback for this session at a particular time. If you have multiple participants who are sharing the line from your location, after each person submits feedback, you can actually click a link and have a new form open up so that another person can submit their own feedback and get their own verification message. If you are not sitting at a computer with Internet access today, those very same links, the resources page as well as the feedback form link, are available at the bottom of the seminar homepage. So you can certainly go back later on. Those links will continue to remain up indefinitely, so you can fill out feedback and take a look at the links at a later date. Again, as I mentioned earlier, today's session was recorded. Everyone who registered will automatically receive an email from us letting you know as soon as the archived version of the session is available for free download and replay, and you are certainly welcome to forward that on to anyone that you think will find it of use. With that, I just wanted to extend my thanks to everyone who was able to fit today's session into their schedule. I want to thank our organizers from EPA Region 5, as well as all the participants who joined us from across the country for today's session. I hope that you found today's Clue and Internet seminar to be a valuable expenditure of your time, and that we'll continue to have you join us for future events. This marks the official conclusion for today's seminar. I thank everyone and hope you have a great day.